How are you doing? It's been a crazy year right now.
Yeah, we're coping. You know, I mean, I think it's been, like you say, it's been a pretty crazy year. We've not had, obviously, no touring for quite some time, so that's been a bit strange. But you know, having said that, we've got on with other things, or I've got on with other things, and you know, it's been productive in some respects. So I can't really complain too much.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you mentioned the touring, because that was one of the things that that I wanted to ask you. Are you someone that misses being out on the road? Or, I mean, like you said, it's not like you're not working. So do you miss being out on the road, or can you take a lot of enjoyment from working at home?
Yeah, I mean, I miss being on the road. It's been, you know, as I say, it's been a long time since we actually did a gig. I think the last gig was in 2019 on the Royal Affair Tour. So, there's been, yeah, lots happened since then, obviously, and, you know, I'm glad I managed to get, you know, a few projects under the belt, and obviously working remotely, because we've been, for the most part, locked down for considerable time here. So it's enabled me to get my head around some things, like, you know, how to, use my computers a bit more creatively and that sort of thing.
Right. Well, you managed to put together this this really beautiful record with the Downs Braid Association with Chris Braid. I gotta tell you, I've been having this really like stressed out morning this morning, and I'm sort of, you know, I was sort of trying to balance a few things. I was feeling stressed out, and knowing that we were gonna talk, I put on the album again. I've been listening to it a lot over the past couple of weeks, and it chilled me right out. So it's a really beautiful record. And I was
I'm glad it's chilled you out. I mean, I think it's, you know, I'm very proud of the record. I think we saw it as an album, and I think that, you know, in these days, it's nice to be looking at making, you know, an album per se, rather than it being, you know, a collection of songs. I think that we've got this this great way of working, Chris and I. We've been, you know, I was saying about the being in this lockdown situation. We've been really working this way from the beginning, since our first album that we were working on in 2011, Pictures of You. And because Chris was in LA and I've been over here in the UK, it's been a pretty normal method that we've actually adopted. And I think that, you know, when you think about a lot of people these days have been working in the same way, because that's really all you've been able to do. You know, you've not been able to get into a room and put together stuff in the normal way, if there is a normal way. So it's been interesting, and I think that, you know, as I say, I'm very proud of the way that it has been I think it's a very creative album. I think it's a very, it's a positive message. But there is that underlying, you know, classical undertones in it that have been made. You know, the influences of a lot of things in there, and it's been, I think out of the four albums that Chris and I have done, I think it's probably the most in-depth one that we've come up with.
It has a really beautiful flow to it, and it's, you know, and as you were saying, it's kind of like, it's a reminder of what, you know, we sort of, I mean, certainly sort of in pop culture and in music culture right now, the album has sort of lost its way. For more, you know, single bass, and, you know, certainly that's part of, you know, the rise of streaming and iTunes and everything, but you guys managed to craft an album, and it has a real flow to it, you know, and it again, the vibe is just, you know, it's progressive.
Yeah,
sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that the dialogue, you know, that Barney has put on helps that flow of the album, and I think it helps it put it into not so much a concept album, but it has, as you say, a nice flow to it. It takes you on a journey, and I think that's really what we wanted to achieve with it, is that it's you know, it has got this flow to it. It's got this momentum that and all the different moves and dynamics. You know, I think we really addressed the dynamics well in this album, so we can cut down to, you know, all these wonderful guitar solos that Dave Bangers has put on. And having this great rhythm section that we've got with Andy Hodge and Ash Stone, And also we can cut right down to just a, you know, somber piano and Chris's voice in certain sections as well. So it's got that, I think it's got that dynamics that maybe you would address maybe classical music to without being added, too overblown. But that's the way that I think that, that the classical composers looked at it, with the dynamics. And I think, you know, it's very much the way that that bands like Yes and King Crimson and, you know, the big prog bands of the 70s, I think that's the way that they addressed songwriting and composition and arrangements, and albeit a different era, I think that we've managed to achieve that on the album.
Yeah, absolutely. It complements the era, but it also, excuse me, to my ears, it doesn't feel retro in any way. It feels very much of the moment, but yeah, it has these wonderful influences that you can hear them, but, you know, when I listen to it, it feels, there's nothing dated about it. It feels very much now, which I love about it. When you're writing, just, you know, when you're writing for yourself or writing for a project, do you have a different headspace if you're writing for, you know, if you're collaborating with Chris versus if you're going to write with for a Yes album versus if you're going to even do an Asia project? Or is it all music in your head and then it comes out and then you sort of determine what it might be best for?
Well, I think the initial idea is, yeah, in my case anyway, they take you in a direction. And I think that, you know, for instance, some of the stuff that I've written with John Davison would be, I'd address it very differently. And in the same way that what I used to write with John, you know, the sadly departed John Wetton,
yes.
It's much a case of when we were working for either Icon or Asia, you know, we had a different objective, I think. And it does take you in a different direction because of the project, if you like, want to call it that, or the band that you're working for or working with. It does take you in a different direction. And so I tend to pick out the ideas that I think that would be suitable. When I send Chris these original ideas, I tend to pick them out and think, well, you know, that's going to be great for DBA. Or, you know, if I pick one out for Yes, maybe that's a great idea that Yes might, you know, adapt and arrange. So it's definitely, it grabs you, you know, when that first idea comes up, it grabs you. And that's really how I work with on Alcyon Hymns, is that these ideas came about, and I compartmentalized them and thought, well, that's going to be great for Chris, and I hope he likes it. And, you know, the whole thing about collaboration is that you really want to appeal to the other person that you're working with, or other people that you want to get that almost the nod of satisfaction and appreciation from that other entity that you're working with. And I found that much the same with Chris, is that, you know, I want him to like the idea, and I think if he likes the idea, then, you know, I'm happy with that, because if we like it, then hopefully we can translate that to other people and they'll get off on it again. You know, so that's it in you know, simplified way of looking at it, I suppose.
I wanted to ask you about a couple specific songs. Tell me about creating the opening track, Love Among the Ruins. It starts the album off so nicely. How did that song come together?
Well, I think it was a very classical piece that had been putting together. It was, I had that sort of classical descending part, and I think Chris really got off on that. And I think that we, you know, when he started to, you know, adapt that and move into different areas, I felt, you know, that was a really strong direction. And the song took on a very powerful statement, I think. You know, Love Among the Ruins, I know that, you know, there'd been a lot of songs about people being in a lockdown and that sort of situation. But I think we felt that it was, you know, a positivity out of problems and not disasters, but, you know, a lot of pressure that people have to endure. And you know, maybe they think their lives, you know, have gone not a great way, then we're trying to get that message conveyed that, you know, out of that can come something great, and love and, you know, happiness and positivity can come out of, you know, maybe at potentially bleak times. And so it does have a certain nod, I think, to the, you know, the situation that we've all found ourselves in, you know, without putting too heavy a, heavy a slant on it all.
How did you know, or when did you guys decide that this could be the album opener? Was it an immediate thought, or did you try placing things?
We tried negotiating. At one stage, you know, before the album became House in Hymns, and that was, you know, to a certain extent, I think that working with Roger on the sleeve pushed us more into that direction, because originally, I think, you know, we were going to call it Holding Up the Heavens, you know, and that was going to be the original title, I think. But as time went on, and then, you know, we saw what Roger was doing with the sleeve and the sort of majestic landscape with rustic images and that sort of thing, I think we felt that, you know, that would, the idea came off of Halcyon Hymns, and that really took us in a new dimension. So at that point, I think that we thought maybe Love Among the Ruins would be, you know, the perfect opening track.
Yeah, it's great. It sets the album off on this sort of, you know, on a great, you know, for lack of a better word, it sets us on a great journey that I feel the album takes us through.
Yeah, and I think that's what we did want to achieve. Because Chris and I, we've both been vinyl lovers, and I think that we often refer back to, you know, the days when you put on one side of the vinyl and you listen to that and then you turn it over and listen to the rest of it. So even though certain tracks might not be instantly accessible, mm-hmm. you still have the idea that it's conceived as a whole. And I think, you know, that's important to make an album like that. And I often had these conversations going back to working with the late, great Chris Squire, and he used to say this whole thing about, you know, the tracks are all interrelated. You know, you've got to be aware of key changes, tempo changes, and dynamics, and all this sort of thing. So it was a lesson that I took on board from Chris, really, that that's how he did, you know, he worked on a lot of those early Yes albums, was that correlation between the type of songs that they had. And even if you go to an album like Fragile, for instance, you know, it's one of the greatest Yes albums ever. And you know, you have that little segment that Bill Bruford did, you know, in isolation, 5% of Nothing, you know. If you take that in isolation, it's only a 40-second track. But in the context of the whole album, it has a relevance, and I think that, you know, there's a wisdom in that.
Let me go off on one tangent for a second. Do you still spin vinyl today? Because I spend way too much money on vinyl, so I'm wondering if you still play vinyl today.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. I mean, we've got the vinyl coming out of this House in Hands up and coming out next month. It's important to us. It's in some ways with a project that doesn't necessarily have this massive commercial appeal, or not so much appeal, but you know, I suppose our expectations are not, you know, we make the music for ourselves,
right,
as much as anything, and if other people appreciate it, then that's great for us too. But I think that we, you know, we think that it's an expensive exercise putting the albums on vinyl, but at the same time, you know, we're not in it in a profit-making,
yeah, sure,
capacity. It's more to do with the fact that we like to see that vinyl. We know that certain people who are appreciative, like yourself, will love having that piece of that item in front of them. And it, you know, when you think about it also, it's to do with the wonderful Roger Dean
Steve. Yes.
And, you know, open this album like you did in the old days, and look at that piece of art. You know, there is a piece of art. You can put it on your, put it in a frame and have it on the wall, or you can put it on your on your table and look at it and open it up like a book. You know, I think that these things are important to me, and I'm happy that there are people out there still appreciating the fact that vinyl has this relevance.
Yeah, there's something also quite, you know, we're so reliant these days on our tech and our iPads and phones and everything. There is something very special about the tactile experience of taking a piece of...
Yeah, I think so. And I think that someone like Roger Dean's artwork didn't really like himself to be reduced down to a postage stamp thumbnail or in fact, the tracks on the album just come out as a collection of MP3s or whatever, you know. I think that's one way of looking at things and the way that it's gone to some large degree. But I still think that there's a validity in having that piece of vinyl there that you can put on. You don't jump around the tracks. You know, listen to it as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
That's an important way of appreciating music. In the same way that if you put on Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, you don't suddenly start like, you know, halfway through the one side of the album and then, you know, jump to the fourth movement. You know, I think that music in some capacity needs to be listened to from beginning to end. And I think that's one of the beauties of making music.
Yeah, and you know, I think our culture has in some ways become, in some ways, not everybody, but there's passive music listening, but vinyl makes you sort of, you need to be more attentive because, you know, it's, you know, just the because you are flipping sides and everything. But I wanted to, you mentioned it earlier, and you mentioned Holding the Heavens, which is my favorite track on the album. It's fantastic. How did that song in particular come together? You mentioned that it was up for possibly being the title track.
Well, I think it was probably the first one we worked on for the album. So I think that was one of the things that the logic behind it becoming the title track was that it had the feel of what was to come, and to some degree it does do that. Again, it has this positive streak in it, but it's not. But it carries some pathos as well. So it has a lot. There's a lot in there of what Chris and I do. You know, our writing, collective putting together these ideas, and it was really it opened the door in a way. I think that was the thing. That particular track was the first one that Chris sent me, I think. And when I sent over all these original ideas to him, and that was the first one that he worked on. And so it had a special meaning in terms of what was to come. You know,
right.
I think it had that. It was like a precursor for the rest of the album.
Well, one of the things that, you know, as it starts, we've got the beautiful acoustic guitars, and then the vocals come in, and you know, I'm sure you're not surprised if I say that, you know, my ears often will go towards what I think might sound proggy. And I thought, gosh, this recalls to me the best moments of Genesis, without aping Genesis. Is that just my ears?
I think it does have some strains of Genesis in there. And certainly the way that, my favorite Genesis album of all time is Sending Evil by the Pound.
Right.
And that had all that the moody sections and quite a lot of acoustic guitar work and, real instruments on that. I think that it's important to hold on to that stuff. And, you know, a lot of people said, oh, well, Genesis sold out and they went to, you know, I Can Dance and
Musical
Touch, all that sort of stuff. Yeah, well, that was a different era. And I think that, you know, bands do have different eras. I think that Yes, for instance, in the 80s, were a very different band from the band that were in the 70s. But, you know, having said that, I think Chris and I have got wide-ranging influences.
Mm-hmm.
So you will hear elements like that all over the place. And I think that, you know, we can't really hide what our backgrounds are and what our influences are. Obviously, Chris has had a huge career in pop music, mainstream pop music. So there's a lot of those little commercial elements that he's popped in there, you know, that it's a natural thing. And certainly from my own standpoint, having, you know, the upbringing that I had, you'll hear those elements of maybe a bit of English church music in there, or, you know, some classical influences. And so it's very much a hybrid of our two backgrounds, really. And so, yeah, you'll always hear a bit of Genesis, you'll always hear a bit of Yes, and, you know, you'll hear a bit of modern-day pop music in there, you'll hear a bit of Bowles in there. It's really, I think, one of the beauties of working with Chris is that I find that we both can relate to that side of things, and, you know, I think it's a great partnership. I can't wait to do the next album, because I think that, you know, each album that we've done, we've come up with something that is, you know, it's quite original, really, in some respects.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's like I said off the top, it's a wonderful album. Now, you know, I can't let you go before I ask you something about Yes, because you and I think we've been doing interviews now for about 10 years, which kind of boggles my mind.
Yeah, we have. We've
gone
back a long way.
I know. And you've always been great and accommodating, so I thank you for that. So this year marks 10 years since you rejoined Yes. It marks 10 years since Fly From Here, which I've probably told you before, and I'll tell you again, it is a top five Yes album for me, regardless of who's doing the vocals. I love that album. I loved it when it came out, and I love it now. But back in 2011, was it an easy decision for you to rejoin the group? Was it an easy decision for you to go back into Yes 10 years ago?
That was great. I mean, I've spoken to Steve and Chris and Alan over the years, and not, you know, I don't sort of play closely with them, but I saw Chris in LA a couple of years prior to that, and there was always this thing about, you know, you should come back to Yes one day. That was the thing that they were telling me. And it didn't really happen because I was, you know, at that point I was tied up with Asia. I think we did a tour with Yes and Asia on the same bill in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
But it was always not bubbling under the bubbling away there. And I think when the opportunity came in 2011 that Trevor was producing their album, they asked Trevor to produce an album. And at that time, Oliver and Benoit had come into Yes a few years prior to that. I think that because the song Fly From Here was very much something that Trevor and I had written way back when.
Right.
And I know that Chris, Steve and Alan wanted to look at that because we never actually released that as a track. And we performed it on stage on the drama tour, but we never released it as a recording. And I think it had always been bubbling away there, and when the guys said to me, you know, look, me and Trevor did this song, and we presented a few more for the album, they said, well, you know, it's your music, you might as well come and join us. So it was really that straightforward. And, you know, I think that, not that it wasn't working out with Oliver, but I think because we were doing this stuff that I'd written with Trevor, and then we collaborated with the other guys, it was a natural step.
Yeah.
So, yeah, from my standpoint, it was great to get back with the guys. And I remember the first recording that we got in the studio, we were recording the backing track from Fly From Here. And it was just like the drama, and just like we'd moved 30 years on.
Right.
And Trevor was doing the guide vocals and standing in the studio, and Chris and Alan were there, and Steve was in a booth, and I was in another booth. And it was almost like you turned the clock back 30 years to when we actually made the drama album. So it was great, you know, it was great times. And I think that, you know, that tour, I really enjoyed that tour. And then, as you know, Benoit got sick at the end, towards the end of that tour. And that's when we got John Davidson, and I think that, you know, that lineup was very, very strong. I think John Davidson did a fantastic job coming in. He knows Yes Music absolutely inside out, so it was a very natural thing for him. And obviously that was a very, very powerful lineup that was in full swing, you know, sadly until Chris died in 2016, I think it was. So it was, I'm very sad to lose Chris, because Chris was such a focal point, such a foundation of Yes. And, but I think, you know, it's important we carried on, and I think that, you know, Yes Music will go on for many, many years to come. And I still feel great being in the band. I still feel like I make a contribution, and you know, I think we're making, hopefully, you know, when we do another album, it will be a great album, and we'll continue.
So on that note, and this is my final question for you, I believe that a new Yes album is in the works from everything that I've read. And I actually spoke to Billy a couple weeks ago about his Prog Collective album. And he mentioned how the band, Yes, is bringing their A game, and that he's been, what the bass playing that he's doing is he's doing it in a way that he feels honors Chris without sort of copying his style. And I also know Yes plays this information very close to your chest. So what could you possibly reveal about the potential of a new Yes album and when we might hear it?
Well, I think that the way that we've worked is very much similar to the way that I've been working with Chris, and that there's been a lot of ideas exchanged by all the members over the internet, and files have been sent, ideas have been assembled, and various things put together. You know, it's not a done deal yet, because there's still work to do, but it certainly moves along a bit. Until we can actually all get into one room, then it's fairly early days. But having said that, I think from what I can see, it's working towards being a really great Yes album, and I think that the fans will be extremely happy with the way the direction's gone. Not the same as, say, you know, the Heaven and Earth album. This album's going to be a lot more. I couldn't really make any comparisons, but I think, you know, it's fair to say that it's going to be a great album.
That's fantastic. Well, I look forward to hearing it, and I look forward to the day when I can see my favorite band in concert again, hopefully, maybe this year.
Yeah, we all.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all do. I think that, time's marching on, and we're all really keen to get back out there again and, you know, do what we do. I mean, that's what we like to do. You know, we like to go out there and play for the fans, and, you know, hopefully it will be sooner rather than later.